ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hello everybody, welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So today I'll be talking about Kashmir Files. I have been wanting to do this for a while. I have not been uploading new episodes on YouTube. So been doing some spaces on Twitter for those of you who are interested. That allows me to directly talk to you. And that's sometimes more entertaining and interesting for me. And every time I go on to spaces, I'm asked this question about Kashmir Files within the first 5 minutes. And then later on in the middle, somebody will come in and say, I wasn't there initially. So here's my question. What do you think about Kashmir Files? So I thought, let me just, make a video on it. So first of all, I haven't seen Kashmir Files. And the only reason for that is I'm still kind of suffering from PTSD after 2 years of COVID, and I avoid going into crowded places. The first movie that I saw in a theater was Batman, which I saw with my family. And just a warning, do not take your child to see Batman. It's not that it's inappropriate, but it is deadly boring for any child. So I regretted having taken my daughter to see Batman, because she was bored out of her wits. Anyways, we can talk about that in this another episode. But the thing is, why am I talking about Kashmir Files without having seen it? This is possibly, many people would have a question, you shouldn't even talk about something unless you've seen it. And what I'm going to talk about is not going to be how it works as a film. That, honestly, I cannot judge, or I cannot talk about without having seen the film. But the thing about Kashmir Files is that it's very similar to what I would believe a Salman Khan movie is, in that sense that most people have already formed their opinions before they go in to watch this movie. It is not a movie which, and it's not supposed to be a movie that's supposed to, I guess, change minds or to inform. I don't think it is that kind of a movie. You either walk in loving it, or you walk in hating it. And if you look at the reviews of this, if you look at the ratings of this movie on IMDb, and I saw it a while ago, so things might have changed, was that there were either everything was 10 or it was 1. And no realistic movie appreciation can have a mirror like that. That is not an accurate mirroring of any movie that I have seen, where either everybody hates it as in this is the greatest movie ever, or everybody loves it as it is the greatest movie ever, or everybody hates it as in the worst movie ever. So this is, and kind of similar to, the worst reviews, that they're basically one star only for that movie kind of reviews. And I've seen many of them. I've few of them on my own books on Goodreads, where some guy logs in, creates an account, reviews only my books, and gives a one star all on one day, and that's it. That's the limit of their activity on Goodreads. So this movie is, by its very nature, is, and for those of you who have seen this movie or have heard of this movie, that this is not a movie that is you're going to change your opinion after watching it. So Kashmir Files has been compared multiple places to Leni Riefenstahl movies. Leni Riefenstahl was a propaganda film movie maker for the Nazis. And right now you have the guy who made Chocolate, who is being compared to Leni Riefenstahl. So this is, of course, technique number one in progressive media, is that rather than engage with the topic or kind of pinpoint as to what exactly the propaganda is, what exactly is objectionable, the easiest thing is to call the guy a Nazi. Once you've called the guy a Nazi, most people will then immediately take a step back, because, if you call somebody a Nazi and then 10 people like their tweet or 100 people like their tweet, you automatically become a Nazi on social media. So that is the trick that people use in order to shut down or bully someone, is to take an extreme example like Leni Riefenstahl and compare Vivek Agnihotri to that. So the moment you see that, it kind of validates what I was saying, is that nobody's really watching the movie, right? When you call somebody a Nazi, and there is no, I mean, this the movie isn't about glorifying any kind of fascist state. You know, if you can say, okay, a biopic about Narendra Modi, given your political opinions, you think that is, you know, glorifying the state or glorifying nationalism. This is nothing like that. This talks about an actual event, a few months of essentially ethnic cleansing of Kashmiri Pandits in Kashmir, and how that leads to comparison with Leni Riefenstahl movies is something which, of course, I understand why people do that, but obviously it just cannot be a valid analogy, cannot be a way of evaluating anyone. It's just, you know, essentially attacking the person and putting a really terrible label on that person. So I read a few of the reviews, mostly the negative ones, because I was trying to understand what people have such a big problem with. Why is this a Leni Riefenstahl movie? And I'm going to summarize, and that's really what this video is going to do, summarize some of the criticisms of the movie, and at least in my opinion, try to see whether it's justified or not. So one of the criticisms, the first criticism that I read was that the movie plays fast and loose with facts. And that sounds terrible, but what fact does it not say? Let's dig a little bit deeper. And the universal impression, or that's not the correct word, but what you get from the criticisms is that lesser number of Kashmiri Pandits died officially than was shown in the movie. And that apparently that is important, because somehow, you know, the numbers are what essentially make something a traumatic event. Now, on the side of the movie, they would say that there are government figures, and this is the government figures, and then there is what people saw. Because you see, this is not an event which happened during Aurangzeb's times. These are people who are alive, who very much saw what happened. Because otherwise, you would find that progressive historians will say, put more weight on oral histories and lived experiences, not on what government figures say. And especially when the government in this case was actively trying to suppress what was going on. But of course, as we know, that the same standards don't apply. So for this, it's very important that the government figures are absolutely true. And anybody who disputes it is obviously lying in this case, obviously, because they don't like the movie. So that's one thing. It's just that this time we will go and choose and to believe with the government figures. We're not going to any other figure, any based on people's lived experiences, we are going to say, no, that's a lie. So that's one thing. Second is, of course, an attack on Vivek Agnihotri himself. And he's a, you know, easy target in many ways. You know, what kind of movies he has made in the past. It's like, you know, many people will say, you know, you only review B-grade and C-grade movies, that's what you're good for. It's that. It's rather than engage with what I'm trying to say in this specific case, they will try to reduce me or reduce anybody in this case. Let's not make it about myself, which I obviously like to make everything about myself. But in this case, to try to reduce Vivek Agnihotri. I mean, it's not a question of just calling him, like, you know, comparing him with Leni Riefenstahl. This, in this case, is just saying that he is, an ineffective hack. It's another kind of attack. So there are two kinds of attacks. Either you are a terrible Nazi who can absolutely, is an evil genius who can change people's minds, or you're an absolutely ineffectual filmmaker who can't do anything. So these are the two kinds of labels that people, when they can't engage with the topic, they go for the person who made it. So, and one of the things that I heard, it was kind of amusing, was that it was a shoddy propaganda movie. Now, here's the thing, you know, you may not like this movie, but when you call it a shoddy propaganda movie, you've already called it a propaganda movie, but when a propaganda movie makes 200 crores in this day and age, post-COVID, and gets people into the theaters, then that movie can be many, many things. But given that it is, you've already said it's a propaganda movie, Well, it's not a shoddy propaganda movie anymore. It's a very effective propaganda movie because you just call it a propaganda movie. And the metric of a propaganda movie is how effective it is in spewing its propaganda. So if it's gotten 200 crores and it's got so many people into theaters, then it can be many things, but it can't be a shoddy propaganda movie. So even when you're attacking somebody, use the proper adjectives, man. The third thing, and this is mostly coming from the family of the Abdullahs and their supporters, of which there are many, that the Abdullahs, the Farooq Abdullahs were not to blame, that it was actually BJP's fault. This is mostly Congress. This is a more political attack. It's not that people are saying this didn't happen, but they want to say, well, you know what? BJP is responsible for this. And why didn't they show that? So that's the problem. So it's technically correct that the people started actually leaving in droves during the Janata Dal government, which was backed by the BJP and also backed by the communists in those days, for those of you who have forgotten. And that Jagmohan, who was the governor of Jammu and Kashmir, was an RSS man. The thing is, what they don't tell you is that at the time he became the governor, he was not an RSS man. He was a Sanjay Gandhi man. And that's the important thing. He was put there as a kind of very authoritarian governor by people who supported him. So you can't deflect that little fact that he was actually a Congress and, you know, Sanjay Gandhi acolyte. And that was why he got the position. And that's an important thing. And that's a lot of people don't call that out. So he was brought in precisely because at that point of the center, at that point of time, the center, which had VP Singh in it, by the way, they felt that he would be the most well-equipped to handle a situation that had gone out of hand, that it was the time for somebody to come in with an iron fist. And he was thought to be the person with the, you know, most iron content in his fist at that point of time. And the reason why he was brought in, and this comes back to, and I saw this interview that Farooq Abdullah had with Rajdeep Sardesai, in which one thing about Farooq Abdullah and his son too is that their main thing is they love to attack the person. Like, they start off with as if you're just walking and you just stepped on their foot intentionally. They start off with this attack. And they think that if they attack, then somebody, people will take a step back. Rajdeep, to his credit, did not. But there were a few things which obviously Rajdeep, I wish he had called him out on, that he didn't. But I would still give him props for conducting, I would say, a moderately fair interview of Farooq Abdullah, where he actually brought up some of these points. So the reason why Jagmohan was called in was because the killing of Kashmiri Pandits had already started during Mr. Abdullah's reign. And obviously, people just don't leave like that, right? There needs to be a history. That history was, and that was the reason why people started leaving, was they felt that there was no trust in the government provided by Mr. Abdullah, that they were not going to get any justice from their government because of its ties with elements of JKLF. That was the reason. And I wish that, and again, we're kind of diverting away from history, but you would say this is not germane to this movie, but it is in a way, that if the movie is being accused of is putting the blame on somebody else, it could be, I haven't seen the movie. But the thing is that it wasn't as if the BJP was in control of the central government. That is not true. And it wasn't that Jagmohan was a BJP person and that was why he was here. So these two things, which are being used as a way to say that the movie is wrong, are wrong in themselves. Point number three. Now, the fourth point is that the movie does not show both sides of the violence. This is possibly the most common critique of the movie, that it has to show both sides of the violence. And there is something to this in the sense that violence was not just on Kashmiri Pandit Hindus. There were many Kashmiri Muslims also borne the brunt of military operations from the Indian state, counter-terrorism operations, as well as operations from Pakistani-backed militants. So this is absolutely true. And large number of innocent people, Kashmiri Muslims, they have lost their lives. And their absolute number is absolutely much larger than Kashmiri Pandits who were killed. But that's also because there were just many more of them. I mean, it's a percentage thing, right? But here's the thing, and this is undoubtedly tragic, and it definitely requires mention, but it doesn't require mention by every movie on Kashmir. That's the thing. Vivek Agnihotri has every right to focus his attention on purely one aspect of the Kashmir problem. And you know why he has the right? Because every movie that has ever been made on Kashmir, and there have been many, have focused exclusively on the other problem, right? They've exclusively focused on the role of the Indian state. They have focused on military, Haider, for instance. So none of these movies, when these movies were released, there was no expectation that they had to be both-sided, right? Nobody said, well, why didn't you show, at least none of the progressive reviewers or one of the progressive opinion makers said, why didn't you show the what happened to Kashmiri Hindu Pandits? Nobody said that, right? And at that point of time, when people said that, this is what, you know, me as a centrist usually get, that like, this guy wants monkey balance. You know, for everything we say, we have to say the thing on the other side. We don't have to. Well, okay. Then neither does Vivek Agnihotri. He doesn't have to either. So the thing is that the ethnic cleansing of Kashmiri Pandits is a traumatic event enough that requires, that is, that justifies a movie on its own, that there does not need to be any requirement that the director show the other side of the story. So that is my, you know, my problem with this kind of critique. I'm not denying, and it should not be denied, Kashmir is a epic tragedy for everybody involved. And but we've seen this tragedy. We as audiences of Hindi movies, we have seen this topic being covered in various forms in popular entertainment. You know, the alienation of Kashmiris, the loss of opportunities. Haider showed vividly the kind of PTSD that Kashmiris encounter in their daily lives. And of course, one has to understand what living under that level of army and military control can do to generations. That's absolutely true. And if your heart is open to the fate of Kashmiri Pandits and it's not open to the fate of Kashmiri Muslims, then you know that's a problem. But the fact is that a movie does not need to cover everything and do this equal on everything. It doesn't need to, because none of the other movies that preceded it did. So why does this one have to do it? The next thing that I kind of heard, and this was more a one-off, but actually it was not a one-off. I've heard like variations of this, is that everything that has been shown in the movie happened. And this is being said by a critic of the movie, that, you know, everything that happened in the movie happened. These are real incidents, but this movie lacks any kind of context, which I was a little surprised. What context? So it was not much explanation given as to what exactly context could have been shown in a movie. But the example that this person gave was of Ukraine, that what if somebody showed only the visuals of destruction of Ukraine without the context of Ukraine being next to Russia and NATO expansion? And I was like, what? What exactly? How? Why? If I'm going to show what's happened in Ukraine in terms of the destruction, the human tragedy, why do I have to give you a history lesson as to how we got there? Isn't the human tragedy enough? Why does it need context? If tomorrow somebody came and bombed my house, would I see, you know what? It's not a big deal. There's a context behind it. No, there's no context behind it. So at least the both sides thing I kind of get, though I don't agree. This I don't get at all. So sure, the violence is what happened. The ethnic cleansing is the topic. There doesn't need to be any historical or political context in order to show a human story. It never has been. I don't think that, you know, movies made like Schindler's List, they don't provide context for what is going on. They don't talk about the Weimar Republic. They don't talk about the Treaty of Versailles. Nobody ever expects that. So I'm really surprised. I would really like to understand what context could possibly be given and why there needs to be any context for a human tragedy of this level. I mean, what kind of context do we need to understand? And what would have been that context if it's not a justification? So if you want to say context, I'm not sure that I even understand what historical context is. I don't understand when the analogy was made for Ukraine either, by the way. Now, the last one, which is again one of the most pervasive, is that, and I was in a WhatsApp group with a very passionate discussion on this, which was that, you know what? Why is this movie being made? We are, so one of the persons there said, you know, let's not talk about the movie itself. Let's talk about, let's be adults and say, why is this movie being made? This movie is being made by the BJP to provoke and radicalize Hindus. That's the reason why it's being made. I mean, let's not get into a, did this happen? Did this not happen? Who cares? It is the why that's important. It's not the what. Now, this again is a question about the intent of the movie. It's like, why is a movie made? Why was, let's say, Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge? Let's not discuss about Dilwale Le Jayenge, but let's talk about why it was made. So this is not a way anybody looks at any movie or any quote-unquote work of art, right? Because any discussion on this is always going to stay in the realm of speculation because there is no evidence as to why a movie is being made, right? So, but there is, it's not just that. It's a question that is important to the extent that we have to, when we are looking at any kind of cinematic work, have to look at the work itself and the reaction it provokes in people, provokes. Because how people react to a work of art is the responsibility of the one reacting. You see, if somebody gets radicalized on seeing a movie, reading a book, the problem is with not the content, in my opinion, but the person who reads it. Because ultimately, you are responsible for your actions. You can't say, this book made me do it, or this movie made me do it. You did it, right? And here's the thing. I don't think anybody gets radicalized seeing a film. I mean, of course, there are radical people who are going in to see that movie. But they are radical people when they're walking into the cinema theater. It's not the movie that is changing them in any shape. There are a lot of people, and I'm absolutely, people should agree that there are a lot of Islamophobic people in India, just like there are a lot of Hindu-phobic people in India too. And these people might have nothing to do with Kashmiri Pandits, might feel absolutely zero empathy for them, but they're just going to watch this movie because it confirms their own biases and prejudices. That's absolutely true. And one cannot deny that there is a significant proportion of people here who will be like that. But what then? Can we not make the movie because of that? Are we not supposed to make the movie? Did everybody who went to watch Haider, did they not have their own biases and prejudices? Of course they had. See, that is there. And so when we talk about the intent, and that's a good question. And of course, you'd see that with the BJP promoting it, it's obvious that it is oriented towards a certain political ideology. There is no doubt it should be extremely naive and extremely dishonest to say it is anything otherwise. But that itself cannot be used to damn the movie. There are a lot of people who are, you know, radicalized are going to see the movie. Well, the movie didn't radicalize them. They're definitely going to be radicalized either way. And whatever they do, whatever illegal things that they do, is purely a function of them. It is not the book or the movie. So that's why I've always had this issue with this provoke, as if people are nanne munne bacche and people just get provoked. They get in and they get provoked. And some people go in to get provoked also. So this is kind of what I felt looking at the different criticisms of the movie. So, you know, in summary, I mean, my main thing is that what makes anything, any work of art worth it? What makes any work of art worth it, as I've said multiple times, is does it find an audience? Is there an audience for it? Does it speak to an audience? And definitely this has. Whatever Vivek Oggenootree has done before isn't germane to this. It's not about Vivek Oggenootree. And I think he would be the first person to say this. Right? It is not about him. Whatever he's made, Chocolate, yeah, it's a pretty terrible movie. But that doesn't matter. Okay, it doesn't matter that he gave this interview to News Laundry or anything. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We are not talking about Vivek Oggenootree. So let's not use a discussion on Kashmir Files to make it about Vivek Oggenootree. It is about Kashmir Files. And most importantly, it is about a generation of Kashmiri Pandits who were made to leave their homeland and they know that they will never be able to return. This is the honest fact. And the fact that they won't be able to go back because nothing, there's no way they can go back. No political party can guarantee their safety. This is the honest truth. And so there is no resolution. There will never be any resolution to this problem. You know, once history happens, it can never be undone. But for me, at least, that's what provides why I feel it's successful, in the sense that, you know, you see videos of people coming out of the movie crying, you know, Kashmiri Pandits, many of them on the sunset of their lives, coming and, you know, crying, because it's told their story. And we are told repeatedly that the success of anything is whether it tells the story of those whose stories have not been told, of marginalized groups. And yet these, if they are not marginalized groups in today's India, I don't know who is. So there's a political opinion, there's a particular shade of political opinion which will not allow them, which will not give them the honor at least of being called even a marginalized group. And that's a separate thing. But they were victims of extreme violence. They left their state. And remember, these people were prosperous people. And the reason why I say this is, and why this is important, is because in general, in our country, the law works for those with money. My experience of the law enforcement system will be very different from the experience of somebody who, you know, drives an auto rickshaw when they deal with the police. It's absolutely true. So when a prosperous group of people leave a place, leaving behind, they have a lot of things to leave behind, right? They leave behind houses, they leave behind businesses en masse. It says something. It says even the prosperous people of a state have lost all faith in the state to be able to guard them or to provide them security. This says something. So this is important. And if for these people, this movie provides some catharsis, some validation, some relief that my story was heard, then for me, that's worth it. It's worth it. If you feel, and again, this is the least that, there's nothing more that will happen to them. They will never be able to go back. So if this small, small solace is all that they can get, is that, you know what? I went into a theater and I found that for 2.5 hours, they just talked about me. I was made, my story was given primacy. It was all about me and what I faced. Maybe that's worth it. Maybe that's all we can do. Now, finally, there are a lot of people who won't like this movie for various reasons, as I've already said. And we've been told again that if you hate a movie, if you hate a book, make another. And the point is that the reason why this, and this is not just limited to Kashmir Files, is for too long we've been told that repeating history, talking about history, is provocative in itself. That we need to censor history, that there are some historical things which should not be said, there are some historical things that should be embellished, there are certain historical things which should be created, because we need to preserve the peace of today. This has really been, at least I've seen, this is how textbooks in West Bengal used to be written. They were like circulars, don't mention these things. So it was considered to be in the public good. It was considered to be a noble thing, that somehow the public needs to be protected from what has happened before. So the act of repeating true things was considered to be provocative in itself and something that good people shouldn't do. So, and the reason that was given was that if you talk about history, then people will be radicalized. They will want to take revenge. That was really the reason. And so you want India to progress. You want India to look ahead. So you don't go back and, rip apart old wounds. That was the common sentiment. So again, the point is that history needs to be told. And if somebody takes revenge based on this, that's on the individual. But that doesn't mean that history needs to be censored or history needs to be suppressed. Because remember, we're only responsible for our individual actions. We are not responsible for the actions of a group. Again, this is what I believe progressives get wrong. I was reading a book where it was all about that this, you are not an individual, you are a member of a group. Unfortunately, if you take this stance consistently, then you get into this problem that somehow you need to hide history because somehow somebody could read history and hold somebody else responsible. If Babur destroyed a temple, somebody who's got absolutely nothing to do with Babur, except that they have the same religion, they're 500 years down the line, I can somehow hold that person responsible for Babur. Or let's say if a Hindu radical killed a Muslim man in Uttar Pradesh for having beef, that somehow me, I am responsible, where it's more likely that you will find beef in my fridge, given that I do eat beef. So this is the point. The thing that is, individuals cannot be held accountable for actions of the group. An individual can only be held accountable for their own actions. And so this whole thing of provocation, I think, is fundamentally flawed, and it's used. And people know that. People are not stupid. What I just now said isn't rocket science. They do that in order to change the present by hiding what happened before. And most people, they don't know any better, right? I mean, it's not as if you wouldn't have known about what happened to Kashmiri Pandits before. There is so many things out on the net. There are so many books. But, people will watch a movie. They need that drama, they need it in movies. I mean, it would have been better if Kashmir Files was a very well-made documentary with absolute interviews of people. So nobody could say that there was any theater or anything. But you know what? Nobody would watch it. That's the thing. So the last thing that I would want to say is that history also follows the Streisand effect. So the more you try to suppress it, the more it comes out. Because in this day and age, you can't suppress history. When we were growing up, you could. There was no internet. The only thing was, government-approved history books written in JNU. So there was like a kind of a group of, you might call them even cabal, but I wouldn't say that cabal, but there were people who were well-meaning in many ways who felt that, these things we shouldn't talk about. And they could at least do it successfully because there were not a lot of people. It was all concentrated in a few universities. And many of them were students of each other. But now you just can't. Now knowledge and history is at people's fingertips. Now you can't deny things have happened. So even trying to deny it, I think, is an exercise in futility. And what it does, it actually fans the flames of radicalism, because you will always say, look, we were never told these things. Ergo, there was a conspiracy behind this. So why not just tell people what happened? In order to have reconciliation, there must be truth, and people must be considered adult enough to be able to use a famous line from a movie, handle the truth. So that's how I will end this show on the Kashmir Files. I will see you in the next show. Till then, stay well. Bye-bye.